everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show, episode number 139. We have two sponsors for you, Environments for Humans. Have a couple of summits coming up, and they're coming up super soon, like next week soon, as we release this podcast. So go check them out and decide to go really super quickly. One of them is on November 5th, and it's the UX Futures Conference, talking all about UX stuff, which is, of course, like the cornerstone of what we do on the web, so of utmost importance. And the SaaS Summit, coming up the next day, November 6th. And that's at sasssummit.com. Use coupon code SHOPTALKSHOW for your 25% discount. They're both going to be fantastic. And lynda.com, LYNDA.com. Go to that /shoptalk. Get a 7-day free trial for the web's largest learning resource, period. They have just a zillion videos on there and learn all about anything. We'll tell you more about both those later in the show. But for now, let's kick things off.
I do declare it is another episode of the Shop Talk Show.
Oh, man, is he back?
I do declare, Mr. Christopher.
I better not.
It is I, Colonel Standards, the web's premier gentleman when it comes to web standards. I would never repeat a div.
I'm glad he got to show up again, just for a minute.
A placeholder is not a label, I do declare.
Nope, it's not.
Hi, I'm Dave Rupert. With me is Colonel Standards.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah. Chris.
Yeah!
Welcome, Colonel Standards and Dave together on the show.
Thank you.
Gonna be good.
A gentleman is always thankful to be on a podcast.
Good. This is gonna go uphill.
I'm.
It is.
Go.
It is a. It is a rapid fire show. Boom, kaboom. We're gonna do mouth ones this time, not because the soundboard is broken, but just because we feel like it, kind of. And people have lots of opinions about the sound effects. And I just can't bring myself to care. I'm so sorry. I just can't.
Yeah,
I've been trying to ask my brain to care, and I just won't. It won't comply.
You've provided a lot of feedback. Lots of people say thank you for no gun sounds. A lot of people say thank you for or bring back the gun sounds. So you get mouth guns. That's if you can't get along, you get mouth guns. Oh, hey, that's good.
The pistol will not be returning.
The southern gentleman, he shoots a six shooter.
Well, we better get right into it because, you know, everybody hates podcasts where they screw around for 45 minutes before they start. In fact, I listen
Do
to
they?
Yeah, I should. There's a couple of things to mention at first, and one of them is Geek Mental Health Week. Andy Clark emailed and said that everybody's going to be talking about it this week. Andy has, you know, had his own issues with mental health and has been into talking about mental health, and just is kind of a interesting thing. And of course, that's an interesting thing to talk about in the world. So we'll put a link in the show notes to learn more about it or whatever. I'm afraid that I'm not like 100% up to date on all what that means or what's happening this week or anything, but it's kind of like be aware of it, be aware that other people suffer for it, be aware that you may, even if you haven't suffered from it yet, you may at some point. Of course, there's it can affect any profession, including tech.
Yeah, I think it's geekmentalhelp.com. I think it's a good cause. Friend of the show, Petra Grigorova, if I'm murdering her name wrongly, I apologize, but she wrote a really good post about how she didn't really think that she dealt with anything. She's always very chipper. Every time I've seen her, she's always very happy and upbeat, but she realized that she's starting to through like grieving a loss of a friend who also suffered from mental illness and stuff like that. So she posted a great post on called Baby Steps, and it's linked from that mental health week site, geekmentalhelp.com. But yeah, it's been a, you know, it's if you've ever lost anyone to mental health issues, or have a family member who suffers from that sort of stuff, it's very, very hard. So
it's the worst. My, you know, I'm not trying to like hop on and be like, I have a crazy story too. You know, but my grandma suffered from it big time, and she suffered from it in a way that was very educational for me, is that it would come on super duper quickly and it would be all encompassing. She would be my fine, normal grandma until just like locking herself in the room, not being able to come out of the covers, not eating, just being incredibly weird about the whole thing. And she would have to be hospitalized for it because it was so intense. She just couldn't take care of herself or do anything. And it was depression. It was clinical depression. And it came from chemical stuff happening in her brain. It had absolutely nothing to do with I'm sad because X or something. It almost has a bummer name, calling it depression, because people associate depression, at least a lot of people do, you know, with something like, I'm sad, my girlfriend broke up with me, or whatever. That has nothing to do with it, you know? And some of that came to light with some of the, like, Robin Williams stuff that happened when we lost Robin Williams, because people, but, you know, there was, of course, it came to everyone's head, how can he be sad? He's a rich movie star. It has nothing to do with that. It is a crazy chemical imbalance in there, and it sucks that those things even share the same name, because they just don't have anything to do with each other, even in the way that they manifest themselves and stuff. So there was a funny tweet I'll throw in the show notes from somebody that posted a funny comment, you know, of somebody be like, but how can I have someone depression if, and then somebody reaches over and puts their hand over their mouth. Stop. Don't do that. That's just a dumb thing to say. And I wish people would stop saying it anyway. And I also wanted to mention just briefly that, just because something isn't like an in-tech thing, like I think this is a perfectly legit cause, but like if you have something affecting your health or body in some way, it doesn't have to be like in tech for you to do something about it. If you have a big wart on your butt, don't wait around for like warts on your butt in tech movement to come along to deal with the wart on your butt. You know, like it's a, if you have any problem at all, deal with it, or whatever, seek help or whatever.
Yeah,
so I think, you know, that's kind of an important thing to consider too. Anyway, I hope you all get better.
Yep. Thanks. And you know, we usually don't take time out of rapid fires for this kind of news, but this is important enough. We want everyone, all of you listeners, however many thousands of people that tune in here, we care about your mental health and want it to be good.
We do. Very much so.
All right.
Good. This is a rapid fire show. If we didn't mention that, by the way, no guests, no drama, no whatever. Hans Schultmann writes in, I was asked to use why I use double quotes when I write HTML instead of single quotes. I couldn't answer. I always did. I always just like that, and I did it like that. I was hoping there was a good reason for this, but apparently there isn't, and links to an article that kind of discusses it. He says, for me, it feels weird to use single quotes, but that's maybe because I'm old and I don't like change. Maybe it is. I don't know. I guess my only opinion on this is that I don't really care as long as you're consistent. It just feels gross looking at code that just arbitrarily uses one or the other. I think that's weird. Single mm-hmm. quote seems to possibly have the edge just because then you don't have to hold the shift key if you write them a lot, right? That seems like mm-hmm. a thing. But regardless of that, I tend to use double quotes as well. I don't know why. I've even standardized my linting machine to enforce the fact that I use double quotes when I can. But you're right. It really doesn't matter.
Yep. I don't think it matters at all. I'm kind of a double quote. I have this weird rule. You know, in JavaScript land, I'll kind of switch it up, you know, when it's like a literal string that will never, ever be changed, I use a single quote. But if it's like a, I don't know.
One reason in JavaScript possibly is if a string you know, there's a chance that a string might have a single quote in it, because you're going to write the word don't or can't or something, and you're going to use the untypographically correct one, which I kind of prefer. I like, strike me down, but I just don't care about typographically correct single quotes and double quotes and stuff. I think they're a pain in the ass. I think that there's always encoding with them, and it wrecks my RSS feed and stuff, and my mind doesn't care when I look at a little prime instead of a quote. It just doesn't matter to me. I know, but it just screws up enough technology I just don't care. But anyway, you might write the word don't, and then it's easier to have double quotes in there because then you don't have to think about it when you're typing out that string. It also kind of matters in like PHP land because what is it? The double quotes will get like variable interpolation in them and the other ones won't, or there's some kind of difference.
Yeah, that's where I picked it up is like the PHP stuff. So, yeah. When I think about something like an alt tag, right, like alt equals a bunch of text that describes an image, for me, there's more of a chance that there would be a single quote in that, echoed out in that. So maybe for safety reasons, I use the double quotes on all my attributes. I really don't know, but it's weird. I don't know. But I think there's not really
in HTML. It definitely doesn't matter, Hans. So what
we can also use no quotes. Did you know that? Like you can do class equals banana pants
unless there's a space in it, or there's all kinds of weird situations. So even the people that have dug into that a whole lot, including Matthias Bynes and stuff, just end up saying, "Well, my advice is just to use quotes all the time because it's way safer." So.
They're the kind of people who would not close a P tag.
Oh, that's some crazy stuff. Let's do the sound of an arrow flying through the air and sticking into a tree.
How about that? Sean Duncan writes in. I do work through a group of students that do all sorts of freelance work for a local business at a considerably cheap rate for the experience. About 6 months ago, I entered into a contract to build a website for a medium-sized local nonprofit. Initially, they said, "Hey, here's our website. We want it to look like these flyers we made." They gave us a few PSD or PDFs, and we gave them a bid, and they accepted. The website was being contracted to finish in 3 weeks. I sense a twist. Do you sense a twist? Okay. Needless to say, it is now 6 months later. Yep. And they're still coming back with more work and additional functionality. I still haven't been paid for the work, and the project manager I'm working with insists that we will get more contracted work with this company in the future.
Really? Your PM is telling you that. Okay, go on.
And is insisting that we keep up the work that is sent to us because they are not explicitly outlined in the contract. I say that I can't keep working for free. We've already exceeded the amount of time used in the estimate of the original bid by a large amount, but I really need that chunk of money if they ever pay us. What should I do?
Let's leave it at that, I think.
All right. Yeah, that's good.
Number one, the first sentence is, I do a work group with a group of students that does all sorts of freelance work for local businesses. A, I think that's super cool. Like, get together with your classmates and make a little business out of it. I think that's super neat, especially because you're a student, so you're for sure doing it for the learning experience, and you're learning how to run a little business, so you can, and then you can be doing work that has a stake to it, because a lot of people respond really positively that we're working on things that is for a business, totally matters. I think that's cool. But then, of course, comes in the bummer part. Like, a company hires you, they just keep, it's scope creep, essentially, right? They're just throwing new stuff at you. And then they plan on not paying you until the end of that. Part of it might be because they're not educated, or that's just what they're used to or whatever or something. And then nobody has communicated to them that that's kind of an unacceptable way to behave and pay people for. I guess I generally think that way. It feels like, there's this nefarious evil restaurant or something. I very much doubt it. It's probably like you just need to tell them what's up. And then maybe they'll do it. And then that's when you know if they're nefarious or not. If you tell them what's up and that, hey, can you pay for the first stage and we'll scope out a second stage for you, and then they're bad about it, then they're just bad news, and then they're fired. You can't do another second of work for somebody who isn't willing to pay you for, the original stage of, at least in my opinion. I don't do a lot of client work, so I always have to put a big asterisk by that, but that's my gut instinct.
Yeah, I think that's about right. Like, it sounds like not I don't want to cause division or dissension in your organization, but it sounds like your project manager is maybe scope creeping. Like, that role should be kind of the defense to be like, hey, this needs to be a version two, or we need to put that off to the client. They need to be kind of that fence. Hey, that's actually a good idea, but let's save that for another engagement if it's like a new page or a new something. I mean, it sounds like the original scope of work. I mean, you should have an email.
Your PM
trail
should be on your side. That did strike me about this, because in conversations I've had with Katie Cabalson, who we've had on the show, well, she was at Happy Cog. Her PM, Brenna, she has just nothing but just incredible things to say about her ability as a PM in where they sit in the like spectrum of work. They, you know, they're very much in the corner of their fellow employees. You know, she's a PM on the team at Happy Cog. Of course, she's in the corner of the. But they're also for the client. These project managers deal directly with the client. So, you know, Katie had nothing but good things to say about her ability to kind of walk that line to be, you know, firm with the client, but also, you know, make the client happy and make the people happy too. And that's what a good PM does. And it sounds like, you know, maybe your PM is a student as well. So maybe they're just learning how to do that. But this is a big old learning experience, and how not to do this when you stop being a student.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, you have to get money and get paid. I think that's really, really important. And then you have to, I mean, maybe it is, there is this come to Jesus meeting where you have to just say, okay, we need to wrap this up just so that we can, whatever, insert excuse, like do accounting or pay each other or something like that. We need to wrap this up, or at least set some intermediate goals so that we can call this done and then extend an engagement. I think you're going to have to figure that out. But again, I'm not a lawyer. I can't see your contract. I have no idea. If it just said build website, then you could be in trouble. I mean, but you shouldn't have to be indentured servants for the rest of your life, just because of a bad contract. So
indeed.
Yeah. All right.
Good luck with that. We should do a sponsor. Let's tell you about the Environments for Humans summits coming up. And one of them is the UX Future. So this is the way all their URLs work. You go to uxfuturessummit.com, and then I'll redirect you to the Environments for Humans URL, where it is all about there. It's in combination with Rosenfeld Media, who's that incredible book publisher that writes a lot of books about UX. But it's one of these one-day conferences, you know, highly affordable because you're just attending it online. It's $179 for a whole day of just listening to UX people talk about awesome UX things. You know, and like I said at the top of the show, it's the cornerstone of everything that we do. And I think these are authors of books on Rosenfeld or otherwise authors. For example, Steve Krug's giving a talk. I'd pay $179 for Steve Krug talk.
Wow.
Don't make me think rocket surgery. Heck yeah. Cool.
That's great.
So that's that. Yep. And then the very next day, that was November 5th, November 6th, which happens to be the day of the CodePen meetup in Austin, by the way. Go to codepen.com/io/meetups and learn about that. It's happening in Austin. So if you happen to be in the Austin or Texas area, come to that. It's a Thursday. So this is a Thursday too. These are compatible events because you can go to the SaaS Summit all day and then drive your butt over to Bungalow on Rainy Street and hang out with us. But anyway, it's a full day workshop thing all about SaaS. And so, you know, the future of it, how to work with it, all that important stuff. I mean, the articles about SaaS just... I subscribe to the SaaS newsletter, and there's like 15 articles a week of written about all the stuff you can do with SaaS. It's insane.
We have a SaaS meetup in Austin.
Do you really?
A whole meetup just about SaaS. It's amazing.
It is wild. It's kind of that's like, to me, that's like bigger than SaaS is. Like the SaaS is variables and loops and mixers and stuff, but it's more SaaS, than that. It's a thing. SaaS, it's a community.
Capitalized SaaS is now turning into discussions about architecture and whatever.
And there's those types of talks are at the SaaS Summit as well, talking about modular CSS and kind of bringing it all together. Looks like Mina Markham closes out. One SaaS file, many sites. Clever.
Really? I was going to – Steve Krug's talk title is What If It Turns Out Steve Jobs Wasn't an Alien?
Is it really?
Does this guy – can we give him an award just for being wonderful?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That's beautiful. Oh, man. One save. One SAS file, many sites. Oh, Mina. That sounds good. All right. Doesn't cool.
It? Save 25% with shoptalkshow.com. Let's do another question. I have one here from James Jackson. I work for an agency that hires a new developer every 9 to 12 months or so, with 5 currently on staff. So besides resources, what kind of things can we put in place not only make that more seamless transition, but also for us to perform as a more cohesive unit? So they, you know, they bring somebody on every single year at this agency. What's up with that? Like, is that a problem? I wonder if James has things in mind that are a bummer, or that maybe there's like a month or two of lower efficiency because of the onboarding takes too long, or something like that. Do you have a sense of why he's asking this? It's always.
So it's interesting when you onboard somebody, when you bring somebody in, you have to bring them up to your style, like your style guide, the way you guys write JavaScript, the way you do code reviews, the way even you commit and rebase and do all that stuff. There's quite a bit, you know, depending on your shop, but there's quite a bit of stuff that you can do, with like bringing people into the fold.
That's just the tech stuff too, which is 100% of important. And of course there's all that soft stuff too, right? Like, how do you tend to communicate? Is this a phone call-y kind of company? Is it like, how is email used? Like, is there, making sure that they are aware of kind of the back channels too, you know, do a lot of people like talk on their own little IM or is a lot of stuff done with Slack? And like, what's the like appropriate way to do it? And then what's the way that everybody actually does it? And all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That can be a little, you know, cause a little tension at first too, I imagine.
All that. Are you allowed to talk to clients? Are you supposed to? That sort of stuff.
So sitting down to make a handbook for you hiring one person a year with a 5-person staff seems like too much. You know, it doesn't sound like this is – it sounds like this is rare enough and you're small enough that this shouldn't be that big of a problem. So I wonder if there's something else going on here. But I can tell you, just from a tech perspective, if you do heavy development kind of stuff, isn't Vagrant the thing that's like is like script up my virtual box?
Yeah, it's basically like your dev environment that mirrors your server.
Which is really nice for onboarding, right? Because you can be like, okay, instead of me wrestling your new laptop into shape and installing all the weird garbage that needs to be on there, and then maybe you have a different version of OS X, and you know, maybe somebody upgraded to Yosemite and somebody didn't, and all those weird little issues like that. It doesn't matter because the whole dev environment is a virtual machine that is in perfect working order. So that's kind of a cool way, like, to, you know, if to make it a more seamless transition, you know, have somebody set up a Vagrant box, just give the new recruit the Vagrant box and you should be all good. Hopefully you're using like Git and stuff anyway. And hopefully that's the person that you're hiring is familiar enough with that. That doesn't change from job to job and place to place. If you know Git, you know Git. Hopefully you are using a pattern library of some kind or a design pattern deal, and you can be like, look, use this, you know. And if you're not, there's benefits to it beyond the onboarding of new employees. There's benefits to your website as well, so maybe look into moving to something like that. I was just at the CSS thing CSS DevConf in New Orleans, and so many people talked about style guides. I feel like back in the day when I was working at SurveyMonkey and trying to move them to a pattern library situation, everybody was excited about it, but the vibe in the industry at the time was that these things just never work. They sound good, but they're impossible to implement. And now, you know, fast forward a couple of years now, and everybody's on board. That's like the standard way to deliver things. And I see quoted over and over and over, Dave, your article on delivering mini bootstraps. You like hit a nerve when you said that. And people love that. They love that line that you kind of coined, which is kind of this like, that's what a tech deliverable is these days. And people are very on board with that's the way things are. I know that was a little bit of a tangent, but all those things can help you with hiring as well and being people like, all right, here's the pile of tech. Let's get a beer, you know?
here's our tech stack. Read this. read this, like, basically, I don't know, a gist or something. I mean, you can do those kind of wiki things. I mean, big organizations have big ones, like in Jira or Confluence or whatever. But, like, just maybe sit down, you know, with another developer or your boss or something and write a wiki or a readme for your company. Like, what if we had a new employee tomorrow? What would they have to know? And then next time you hire somebody, it may just be like 30 minutes to like update everything. You know, I feel like that is any kind of like written documentation, like step by step, how to get somebody up to speed or even like links to articles that you guys kind of identify with. I think that helps somebody and you can kind of establish a culture. That's kind of your culture document that any developer could come in and kind of acclimate themselves to. That's what I think.
Oh, I did a gun. I was not going to do that. Oops.
Oh.
But at least it was a fake mouth gun. Israel Bowie. He probably says it in the MP3, so let's play the MP3.
All right, here we go.
Hi, my name is Israel, and I'm a front-end developer in Dallas, Texas. My question is about rendering quality of text when the CSS transform scale is applied to a container. After the scale is applied, the text looks blurry. I try using some of the fixes like text stroke, for example, which improves the quality of the text, but it still is not very sharp. So I was wondering if you guys have any other suggestions. Thank you.
Have you felt this? I think everybody's seen it, whether you know it or not, is when you have like, you know, a div with some text in it and you use a CSS transform into it. And it can be scale, but it can be any of them, I think, like rotate or whatever. The text just doesn't look as good while that transform is applied to it, whether it's transitioned or not. You've seen it, I'm sure, Dave.
Yeah, I know we've had issues in the past with rotating, and that makes sense to me, just the anti-aliasing.
Yeah, this text was never meant to be at a 32-degree angle on the screen. It's just weird, you know?
Yeah, but the scale seems weird. But I guess it does the browser just raster something and then use the graphic engine to blow that
up? Yeah, I think it's like a tech thing that screws it up. I even think it's an issue with even if there's no scale or rotation at all applied to it, when you just translate it, just left or right or up and down. I've seen it hurt. And the, you know, where it comes up a lot of times is there's a really excellent way to center things in CSS when you don't know the parent size and you don't know the child size or you don't know nothing about the environment it's in. You can still go like left 50% and then translate X negative 50%. And you can do that in both directions if you want to, vertical and horizontal, and it'll center in that area, which is just super nice, right? Because translate is based on not the parent size like top is, but the size of the element itself. That's why that works. And a lot of people have said, well, I love doing that for modals or whatever, but then the text in there is blurry. I see it less and less because I happen to have a Retina MacBook Pro, and I feel like because of the high pixel density of the screen, I just notice it less, and I think it's more of an issue on, you know, other browsers and more like 1x displays so much. And I think the reason for it is possibly related to that sub-pixel rendering thing that happens. And what's funny about it is that's what makes like animations of transforms look so good, is because it does that sub-pixel rendering thing instead of just going like pixel, pixel, pixel. But at the same time, then that makes text look blurry. And I do not have a complete understanding of this, so if I'm making a fool of myself, I'm sorry. But I don't know. I think it's kind of like wait around for the browser to get better at it, in a way, unfortunately. And if it looks so awful that you can't deal with it, then you're just going to have to find some other way to One of my impressions is that do you really need transform scale for an element with text in it that needs to be read at all times? A lot of times something like scale and rotate and stuff is just kind of a temporary deal.
Like a bounce in or something
like
that?
Yeah, that doesn't need to, like the readability of the text isn't paramount at all times for the size of it. And if it is, can you just like make it bigger some other way by literally increasing the font size and stuff?
Yeah, like increase everything else. I don't know. I'm putting together a CodePen just to kind of see it here, but it's interesting. It's like I don't know. I see the little bit of a blur, but I do. I wonder if it's based entirely on monitor quality or whatever. So.
Suspect the browsers are aware of it and. You know, that's what browsers are for, is keeping an eye on that stuff, trying to make it better over time.
So, yeah, Davitron 5000, Pen J, capital G, MFG, I did. And it doesn't look super different, but I'm sure it's even further complicated by how different browsers do it, because there's probably no spec on, like, text rastering on a whatever, on the... I don't know. Yeah, interesting. I'm so conflicted. I've been using Firefox lately, and it has way, way better text rendering.
I can see it. You're in your code pen on.
Yeah,
well, it's though, or am I insane?
Is it? It's a little jank. I don't know. I think it just kind of, craps out. So I'll do another one that's just like a trans. Font size, and then...
Well, I was thinking the bottom one is the one that's blurry, but the top one is the one you scaled, so I am really seeing things.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll just figure it out.
Maybe this is an old question, and Chrome has gotten better at it or whatever, or maybe it's not. Maybe yeah, we should be looking in not Chrome. We should look in something else.
Well, and that's the thing, is the browsers, like, change everything, like... Every 2 weeks or something like that, they release some sort of different thing.
Oh, it's getting harder to talk about web stuff with versions, because it just is, you don't know what to say anymore. It's weird.
I'm like rotating one now, and it looks kind of just fine. Well, I wonder if they're starting to use SVG and stuff.
Maybe. I looked at this demo on all the major browsers, and they all look fine. In fact, you know, like back in CSS Tricks, I always used to like be really clear. About, you know, like I'd go back and update an article and be like, oh, I'm going to cross that out now and say, oop, this was fixed in Firefox 6 or something like that. And it was always like, I feel like kind of appreciated, because then there was like a history of what was fixed and what isn't now. And like, there was an article that Sarah Sudin just published on CSS Tricks about animating SVG with SMIL or whatever. The syntax built right into SVG. It's a great article. And there was a bug in it that prevented one of the CodePen demos from working quite right in Chrome. And it was bugged, and she put a link in the article to the bug in Chrome, which is like a totally appropriate, smart thing to do on a site like CSS Tricks. And then they released a new version like in the last few days of Chrome, and it fixed that issue. And so the right thing to do when updating that article wasn't to cross it out anymore and put this was fixed in Chrome 38 or something. Like, it's just not interesting anymore. That just clutters up the article. Just remove it. We just removed that entire line that talked about the bug, because nobody has an older Chrome than that. You like can't, you know? Anyway, a little aside there, but...
So unless it's like a client thing, Israel, like where you are stuck and they won't do anything unless you do something... I just let it go, because you browser text rendering engines change all the time. There you go. Somebody mixed that up. I'm looking forward to your remix. Thank you, Internet. All right. Hopefully we answered your question. Bow,
bang. Let me do it up. A sponsor from lynda.com, lynda.com/shoptalk. That's the URL you'll go to if you want to snag your free 7 days Speaking of free trials of paid software, though, CodePen is, we're giving away 7 free days as well. Or it's actually 14 days. Ooh. And you just go to, just go to the blog, or I'll give you the URL for it. Cause I feel like I should promote stuff like this when I do it. Promo, go to /promo/free-trial. And you have 14 days of CodePen. You can activate it whenever you want, which I think is kind of cool. So if you know that you're going to like, you really want to collab with one of your friends or something, just save this up. And then when you want to do it, just click the button and activate your free 14 days and whatever and go. It's the same deal at lynda.com. Like maybe you can time this free trial just right so that you can, go on vacation and load up your iPad app, your lynda.com iPad app with a bunch of stuff that you know that you want to watch and watch it all on the plane and stuff. Totally make a long flight. You know what? I have a long flight this Wednesday. Going to Norway for the Trondheim Developer Conference. I'm totally going to do this. I'm going to load up with some leveling up tutorials. But, you know, there's so much stuff on lynda.com. We talk about it all the time. One of the many, like, sub-genres of video learning stuff that they have is stuff about audio and music. They have 145 courses, which are, you know, a course on lynda.com is, like, a thing. It's, like, an time investment. It's, like, you will know all about that thing when this course is over. You know, how to learning logic, getting started in audio and music production, getting started in the business of songwriting, all the specific software and stuff. If you're a musician and want to get into the tech and stuff and the business and stuff behind being in the music industry, lynda.com has you covered. 145 courses all about that kind of thing. And of course, all the web design and development and stuff, the stuff that we talk about here on CodePen is covered there as well. Enjoy your free 7-day trial by going to lynda.com/shoptalk. Let's do another one. What do you got, Dave?
Chris Hallahan writes in, what are the latest developments for dealing with responsive image, quote-unquote, art direction problem? Mm. This is something I constantly struggle with on our university website, especially large hero images that have text on the top of them. Inevitably, some VP's head gets cut off due to unpredictable scaling and cropping at different sizes. A lot of the times, the photo to be used is not our choice.
Man, lots of things are popping into my head, but do you have some thoughts right away?
Well, so, Chris, you're in luck. Native Picture is hitting browsers this month. So yeah. Chrome, Opera, and Firefox should be out this month.
So that needs to be part of this conversation for sure, because this is an interesting world. Now, before we get started down that line, know that the picture element is for... it's 4 images in your HTML. It's 4 images that belong in your HTML. Like an illustration in a blog post or something that's necessary for the content of the article. That's where it belongs. And that's where it's very hard to handle images because of what's known as the prefetcher or whatever in browsers. And it reads through your HTML very, very quickly and grabs the sources of images and starts downloading them before you have very almost any input at all in that situation. That's why this is hard. And that's what picture, and not just picture, of course, but just the source set attribute on images comes into play. But you just need to know that. I feel like this gets talked about a lot without that disclaimer. Without, you know, and Chris here is talking about the hero image at the top of the website. Does that hero image belong in the HTML? I don't know. Maybe it doesn't. If it's a university website with some, you know, some good looking and, you know, ethnically diverse people walking on campus, you know, like that's just flavor for the website. It's not really part of the, you know, I would argue anyway, most of the time it's not really necessary to be in the HTML. And this is not a problem in CSS. With CSS, you can use media queries and you can swap out what background image is shown with media queries. And that's not a problem for the prefetcher or whatever. It will just download just the one that matches. So use that for your hero images and stuff like this. Things that don't need to be in the HTML, this is not a big problem with. Right?
Yeah. So I would agree. I think some of it isn't necessarily super necessary to it's not a content image. You can move around responsive images really quickly, but the problem I feel like I'm hearing is that you know, important parts of the image are getting cropped and stuff. Like maybe he's doing background size cover or something like that, and things are getting cropped and
sure. And Dave has a classic approach to that too, which is the aspect ratio box, right? Which works pretty well. Like the height is zero, but the padding top on it is set to a percentage, which is based then on the width of the element, which is the little trick that's necessary to make it so that when the width of that changes, like it's a fluid width kind of box, that the height of it changes as well. It's a pretty clever little deal. Have you ever seen that technique, Dave, where they use a pseudo element to do it instead of padding top?
Yeah.
And it's kind of neat because the padding top method is you need to, if you want to change the aspect ratio of the box, it there's something weird about it. Now I'm forgetting with it. It's like a hardcore, it's like a magic number essentially. But with this with the pseudo element technique, it's not somehow.
Interesting.
All right. I forget how that works.
I accept it.
Well, we should talk about it more clearly later, but anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, I have seen some like JavaScript things, and I was trying to Google around and find something, but where it's almost like face detection, and so it's able to abstract like what's important in the image and focus on that. Well,
that's crazy.
Yeah. I can't remember where I saw it.
That sounds like a heavy little JavaScript-y thing to put on a website, but maybe not.
Well, and that's going to happen.
Unless it pre-processes it and sets that as like a data attribute or something.
Oh, maybe it does that. But, I think it would have to show up after DOM load or whatever. I think it's basically it sets a CSS clip or whatever, 00, 400, 300 or whatever. But it does it based on a certain, like whatever density of pixels and stuff like that. So, I can't remember where I saw it though, so I'm totally failing you. I'm sure it was probably from HTML5 Weekly. So that's
a good one.
Head over to HTML5 Weekly, Dakin.
I feel like because we mentioned picture, first of all, you know, I'm not sure if I made this clear earlier, but picture isn't just always the picture element. That was caught in my head for a long time too, and I published an article about it, kind of just an exaggeration of a Jason Grigsby article who also wrote on it that was just saying that if what you're trying to do is just have different versions of the same image to serve to the right devices, that the correct tech for that in this world of responsive images is the source set attribute on images. And it's built for that. And there's lots of reasons for it. And it's just irrefutable evidence. And please read the article and check that out. If you need art direction, which Chris says that he does, that was in the first sentence of this question, that is built for the picture element for other various reasons. So that's the kind of the correct technology to use there for explicit media queries in which you decide to change the source of that image. It makes the most sense for. Whereas source set is just like some suggestions for the browser to do it, and it will do a better job than you could with a less terse syntax. Anyway, I know that's a very complicated thing to explain with words on the radio, so just kind of I'll link to those to those posts. Now, another important thing that's like impossible not to mention here is if you go down the road of using the picture element even more so the source set attribute on images, you need to decide if you're going to polyfill it or not. And if you choose to polyfill it by using the very good picture fill library, it's a weird polyfill in that you're kind of locked into it forever. Because the markup is such that you cannot put the source attribute on the image, otherwise the prefetcher is going to grab it and it's going to load it. So the way that the polyfill gets around that is saying, don't do that. You just put them all in the source set instead, and the polyfill will take care of it. Problem is that doesn't give you a very good fallback. The fallback, you just don't have a fallback then. It's kind of a bummer if JavaScript doesn't run. So it's a very tough call if you're going to use picture fill or not. And the browser support is so low at the moment that it's really tempting to use it. But just know that the markup that it requires to do the best job that it can do is locking you into that polyfill forever, unless you kind of have a plan to go back and deal with that and update markup later, which, you know, you could. That's no problem, but...
Yeah.
Just okay. I just wanted to say that. I know it's not directly related to Chris's question there, but it's kind of the state of development. So
yeah, and what I did so we for clients in the past, like you basically give them the large image size, and if you know you're going to crop or something like that, you set a safe zone, and like you kind of like know what edges are going to get cropped on the smaller one. So that's something we did for a client, a very big client recently.
That's pretty neat because you're like, okay, so, with some cropping, but just not, yeah, don't crop off the handlebars of the bicycle or something.
Yeah, exactly. And we were doing like a vertical media query to make it shorter too, like on, mm-hmm. on, you know, so we kind of had like a vertical safe space and a horizontal safe space, just to be like, hey, this will like basically crop off this and this. So choose wisely what you're going to do. So, yeah, so that's what we did. So
fantastic. Bada boom. That's a weird, that was like a jazz bomb.
Oh,
yada bada boosh.
Skidoo dat doo. Kurt Meredith writes in, I've been working with organizations who have their own IT departments to handle hosting for their websites. I would like to start developing for folks who don't already have their own hosting companies, and I am unsure the best way to go about it. All right. Here we go. Do I set up a single umbrella hosting plan with a company like Media Temple and host all sites under that plan? If so, do I then charge a client a monthly or yearly fee for hosting their site, or to help offset my hosting fee, or can the hosting company handle billing the clients? Do I set up a completely separate hosting plan for my client, hosting plan for my and every client's website, and just completely hand over the plan to them when the site is ready to launch? How do web designers and developers handle the hosting of their own sites and their client sites without it becoming a logistical nightmare?
This is a great question. There's so many aspects to it. Kurt's in this position where he wants to offer hosting, and presumably you want to offer hosting because it's a weird, complicated thing. And when clients come to you, it is kind of nice to just handle it for them. And handling it for them is work, and what you charge money for is work. So it kind of makes sense that you're like, hey, client, don't worry about it. Hosting is a thing that I know about. I'm going to get you this kind of hosting. It's going to cost this much money. And presumably you mark it up because that's what a business is and does. And you make some money on it, and maybe even additional money to the website that you're designing from them, because, you know, it's all work. So that's kind of interesting. I would a little bit shy away from it as a business model, unless you just love dealing with hosting. You know, it is probably not something you can mark up a ton, just because I feel like clients could possibly be sensitive to that if they go around shopping for their own hosting and you are charging them an arm and a leg for something pretty simple. And it can be a nightmare. You know, what if that company leaves you? You know, how do you hand it over? You know, like you said, having a separate web hosting plan for each client is the cleanest way to handle that, because then possibly you could just, you know, transfer the ownership of that account to them and they could start paying for it or whatever. You mentioned, can the hosting company just bill them themselves? That would be some kind of white label hosting, possibly, or maybe you just don't care about the white label and just get their credit card and use that to set up the thing. That's a possibility, I suppose. But then it's kind of like you've lost then your opportunity to upsell it, or to you know, charge more for it than you're paying for it, which is a completely reasonable thing to do since you're doing all the work. I guess it can get hairy and stuff. It does seem a little weird to have this big umbrella plan and put a bunch of websites on it, even though, you know, you certainly could do that at a company like Media Temple. It just seems like then it's like, what, you know, client B has a really busy day and it takes down client A's website. That can happen when you're all on the same server. That seems not only like a bummer for everybody, but kind of unfair to client A, who did nothing to get this downtime. A lot of ins and outs here. I would try to step away from it the best you can, just because maybe unless hosting is going to be your business.
Yeah, I would agree. We at Paravel, I probably told this story before, but we at Paravel started out with this. We were like, oh, this is great, and we'll make so much more money a year. And back then, I think we did the math, and I mean, we had let's say we had 10 clients and we charged them $30. That's an extra $300 a month, right?
Sure.
So, and you're like, oh wow, that's great, you know. But then you have like 10 clients asking for email help, and then you're like, oh geez, that's occupying a lot more than $300 of my time. And so it sounds like a really awesome like way to make like a little bit of bonus cash. But in our experience, it became, you know, a little bit of hurt after we had, you know, 20 sites and they're falling over on the weekend and you're like up late trying to fix it and on the phone with the hosting company while your client's calling you and getting angry at you. So, it was kind of a little bit of stress for not a lot of money. I mean, it maybe netted us, you know, $3,600 a year or something, which is like a paycheck. That's pretty cool. But like, but yeah, it didn't, it was really hard to scale. So for us, so unless you're like planning on doing that only, I would like what Chris says, I wouldn't do that. But what you can do, if you're worried about covering your hosting costs, get an affiliate deal, right? Can't you do that with like,
no, that's not a bad idea, right? Companies? They use their credit card, they sign up for the plan, they own it, they pay for it. All you do is have access to it, which they could cut off any time if they were to leave or whatever. But maybe you even set it up for them, and as you're setting it off, you're kind of typing in your own name into the necessary fields, which gives you an affiliate.
Right, you send them a link and you say, like, I recommend this host, and they'll click it. They don't care about hosting. Like, Joe client out there isn't going to be like, well, I found this dream host for $6. It's just say, like, this is the best host. I haven't found any other. I trust them. Mm-hmm. This is what I use for my own sites, and they should take your word for it. They shouldn't, like, just be like, surprise. You know,
it's not exploitive at all. That's what an affiliate program is. You're the perfect, that's the perfect affiliate transaction. They wouldn't have made that sale if it wasn't for you. So of course you should get a little something out of it without tying yourself to the tendrils of hosting, which is terrible. Worse than hosting is owning their domain. Never do that. Even if you're going to go down the hosting route, don't buy their domain for them. For the love of God. Yeah. Okay, let's do one more before we wrap here. We have an audio one that hopefully will load. These questions aren't like in the order they came in, if you didn't know that about Shop Talk Show. So I often just look through the whole pile for ones that I just feel like answering this week. And sometimes the questions when they're self-hosted like this.
Shop Talk Show.
Oh, here we go. Yep. Ready?
The other day I saw a Stack Overflow question where somebody posted a PSD of a share button their designer had given them and asked for someone to make it work using pure CSS. It felt weird to me for someone to ask for a complete feature on the stack. Usually you go to Stack Overflow if you don't know how to do something, and then they help you clear up a misunderstanding of how CSS works, or they show you a trick, the one employed here with some clever math and transforms, to get the result you want. But it's different to just hand off a PSD and ask the community to straight up do it for you. But on the other hand, if they're willing to do it, why not? What are your thoughts on the ethics of outsourcing to Stack Overflow?
I'm not sure if Stack Overflow is important here. We can just say anywhere. You know, basically they just put this PSD out there and said, you know, how do I do this? You know, which is maybe a thinly disguised way to get some
code
free
this
work
for me.
maybe, or maybe they are just so innocent that they just think that's a perfectly legitimate question. You know. There is a distinction here between this type of thing, which, however, you know, may be at worst kind of in bad taste, and something like spec work, in which that you say, you know, all right, everybody, here's a PSD. The first one that gets it done, I'm going to give $20 to, or something like that, and which is unethical for different reasons, because, you know, there's no transparency in who's going to get it. You could just lie, all that type of thing. Or, you know, everybody design, you know, CSS up this button for me, and I'll pick the best one, and then you can do the rest of the site for me too, that time for money. Like, there's moral and ethical concerns with that approach, whereas I don't think this is a breach of moral problems. It may be a little like of bad taste or something, or just kind of cheesy and dumb and screw you-ish, but it's not like they're not being evil here, whereas it is evil if you take it to that next level and be like, I'll pick the best one and only pay them or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, if people are just giving away work, you can't really fault, like...
They might get a kick out of it. I mean, there's the CSS off that, you know, that thing that we did once in a while or whatever that was kind of like basically a huge version of this. It's an opt-in thing. Here's a PSD. Code the entire thing up, you know, mostly just for fun. So it's not, it's not a problem. This is an opt-in thing. Maybe it feels a little weirder on Stack Overflow because it doesn't feel as opt-in-y. Like this is showing up in people's Stack Overflow feeds or emails or however they, you know, read new questions on Stack Overflow. And it's just all of a sudden showing up this weird request for work. It might break some of their like community guidelines and stuff. I'm not even sure. But I just wanted to make a distinction between, I don't think this is morally wrong. I just think it's slightly like in bed. Taste.
Yeah, like I wouldn't do this. I wouldn't just put something in a PSD. I hope I wouldn't, but you know, maybe I have totally in the past. I would actually probably be on the like, I'm just gonna code this. Like I saw it on Dribbble. I'm just gonna code it. I don't care.
But then that's truly opt-in. Then the person doing the work has chosen to do it. It wasn't asked for.
Right. And you know, I guess a person, maybe that person was like, they were literally trying to do a job and this is the PSD that came across their desk and they're like, how do I do this? Because I think
it's a nice way to live life is to assume that people aren't nefarious at first. I would assume in this case that it was innocent-ish. Mm-hmm.
But you know, maybe you totally conniving and trying to get free spec work, you know, and it's like,
well,
you won the game this time, bad guy. Yeah. But
again, like, not quite spec work, but it's similar. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I guess I'm making it worse because I'm confusing the term. But yeah, what do you do? Would you code this up, Chris, if it came across your little Stack Overflow?
No, but I'm just a jerk. No, just kidding. But no,
Turn it into a CodePen article?
Maybe. You know, I shouldn't say just automatically no. Of course, I might if it struck me in a very interesting way. You know, I saw one of these things actually come up on CodePen the other week because a company called Mobify uses CodePen a little bit for like a little bit of like coding hiring challenges. And I think I kind of ruined it for them, unfortunately. They literally had an image of a button, just a JPEG, and it had a bunch of CSS stuff that was very clear that would be a little bit challenging to do, like some kind of insetty shadows, and it had some kind of stars on either edges of the text in the button, you know, and they were kind of like, mm-hmm. It was clear, like, you know, we're very interested to see how you would approach this from a CSS perspective and an HTML perspective as well. You know, can you do this really well? Can you, do it semantically and all this stuff. And, you know, I noticed people doing it. I think I tweeted it or something. And then like, you know, 10 people did it. Because some people just get a kick out of a little challenge like that. That may be how it feels on Stack Overflow. I'm not sure. But you know what I mean? Sometimes if I got a big kick out of something, I might do it. But I would never subscribe to a website where that's all that people were doing was like, do this now. It would be kind of a sucky community vibe. I think of a lot of people just asking for free work. Has to come up a little more organically than that.
Yeah. Yep.
Anyway, that's a weird place to end this one, but thanks for listening to this week's Rapid Fire, man. How would we do like a cannonball? Like, and then it doesn't make any sound. Oh, that's really good. Like the sound of like a cartoon.
Yep. I'm going to stop. I was going to say, my son can say the word poop now.
Good.
I don't know why I wanted to tell you that, internet.
He's like sub 100 words too. Right?
Oh, it's like 4. It's like mama, dada, banana.
Wow.
So there you go. It's up there. Anyway, hey, thanks everybody for tuning in to another Shop Talk show. Thank you, Colonel Standards, for stopping by the studio. Oh, I had a pleasurable time. And thanks everyone for indulging our split personalities here. Chris, you got any? Oh, be sure to follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show. Rate us up in your iTunes podcatcher of choice. Yeah, thank you, everybody. And Chris, you got anything else?
Well, nothing but ShopTalkShow.com.